Place, please, announce the lawyers.
Portman now calls City of Arlington versus Taylor Kovac. May it please the court, Mr. Chad Arnett will argue for the appellant. Mr. Christopher D. Livingston will argue for the appellate.
Okay, thank you. If you're ready, we'll go ahead and get started. Mr. Arnett.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court.
Counsel.
This case involves an issue of great importance to the City of Arlington and also to employers in Texas who have employees who are not at will. And that issue is whether an employer's decision to terminate an employee for cause is to be based on information known by the employer at the time of termination, or instead whether all information must be considered, including information that develops after the termination date. Also before the court today is the statutory right of chiefs of police to impose polygraph examinations on their officers in extraordinary circumstances. In addition, before the court is the trial court's ability to modify an arbitration award when the manual provision with respect to judicial review only contemplates that the award may be vacated. I will address each of these in turn, but if it pleases the court, I'd like to go through the factual background very briefly. Over the course of 90 days in 2010 and 2011, Arlington police officer Tibor Kovacs was accused of three separate assaults by two different women. One, a citizen he pulled over while on patrol, the other, his fiance. Mr. Kovacs was also accused of threatening to harm Arlington and Cedar Hill police officers who were investigating those alleged crimes. And as a result of his conduct, Mr. Kovacs was arrested by Cedar Hill and sent to the Dallas County Jail, where he stayed for 42 days. While he was in the Dallas County Jail, the Arlington Police Department, or APD as I'll sometimes refer to them today, terminated his employment. Now, Mr. Kovacs first appealed his termination administratively, then by arbitration, and when the arbitrator ordered his reinstatement, the city filed this suit seeking to set aside the arbitration on the ground that the arbitrator improperly considered post-termination evidence in reaching his decision, namely affidavits of non-prosecution and grand jury no-bills that happened after the termination date. The city also sought a declaration that the chief of police is authorized by state law, the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, the government code, to impose a polygraph. The trial court modified the award but confirmed it and denied the chief's right to impose the polygraph examination on Mr. Kovacs, and this appeal followed. The arbitration award in this case must be vacated because the arbitrator exceeded his authority in considering post-termination evidence.
Well, counsel, could you address directly the I'm having a problem, maybe. There seems to be a difference between post-termination conduct of the employee being considered by the arbitrator under the case law and post-termination events, which is what we have here, the affidavit of non-prosecution, doesn't seem to add any new evidence of conduct, of different conduct by the employee, or even additional conduct. It seems to be saying she doesn't want to prosecute the for the conduct that he already committed, if he did. And then same thing with the, what's the other thing? What's the second thing?
With the polygraph?
No.
Oh, the
no-bill by the grand jury. Concerns the original conduct that had already occurred before the termination, not some new conduct that occurred afterwards.
Right. We rely principally on three cases. We rely on a Fifth Circuit case called Gulf Coast, a Southern District of Texas case called STP Operating, and another Fifth Circuit case, the American Airlines versus the Pilots Association. All three of those cases involve different types of post-termination evidence. One involves evidence of the employee's odds of rehabilitation, The other, the STP case, involves a doctor's note that surfaced after the termination that revealed that the employee was actually injured on the dates he was absent from work and for which he was subsequently terminated or previously terminated. The American Airlines case actually involves post-termination conduct by the employer, not even the employee. It was conduct of American Airlines after termination that the arbitrator said this wasn't fair, it wasn't just, there was an administrative step skipped, and the court considered that to be improper post-termination evidence. I don't see in the cases any distinction to be drawn from the type of post-termination evidence. The cases are rather broad in their holding that any consideration of post-termination evidence that leads an arbitrator to assess whether the employee was properly terminated on the date of termination is improper. Because an employer, of course, can only make decisions based on real-time information and what they have. And even the Supreme Court has said in the MISCO case that employment decisions stand or fall based on what the employer knew at the time. And if you consider evidence after that case, after that date, it's improper.
Okay. And the appellee says this case is different because it specifically is limited to conduct, whether the issue in arbitration, whether the conduct did occur or not, whereas those cases saying that post-termination evidence won't be considered or cases that use language of just cause, that there was just cause.
That's correct. Yes, Your Honor. Excuse me. Didn't mean to speak over you. The appellee does attempt to distinguish this case from our authorities on the ground that the inquiry in some of those cases was whether the employee was terminated for just cause. Here the inquiry is, did the employee violate the personnel rules as charged? I would urge that there is no distinction to be drawn there. In fact, in the American Airlines case, the court addresses the language just cause, and what does that mean? And what that court says is there's no magic to the phrase just cause. That is simply a description we use in employment law to describe the myriad reasons why an employee can be terminated for cause. I don't think that that is a distinction that matters here.
One thing that confused me, and perhaps you can clear this up for me, in the findings of fact that were entered by the trial court, did the trial court not find that the arbitrator did not rely on post-termination evidence?
The trial court did find that in the findings of fact and conclusions of law. The findings of fact and conclusions of law were entered about a year and a half after the trial. And during the trial judge was very clear with respect to his belief that the arbitrator did, in fact, consider post-termination evidence. He said that very clearly. We've set forth that in our brief. Ultimately, after this appeal was stayed and remanded back so that findings could be entered, you're correct, Your Honor, that the trial judge reached the opposite conclusion. And, of course, this is a de novo review, so we're asking that you take a fresh look at it in any event.
Statements made in the brief, Mr. Arnett, that there's never been a Texas court rule on that proposition.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So how did you give us this opportunity to make this first ruling? I want to thank you for that.
Your Honor, we were certainly hoping that there was some authority on this, but I think it's good law. And you think about the quandary employers can be put in, depending on which way this case goes. The appellee would suggest that when you terminate an employee or propose to terminate an employee, that they have to be put on indefinite leave or suspension or something until all facts applicable could develop. In this case, that could have resulted in criminal trials, appeals, all kinds of delay before the city knew what it could do with respect to this person's employment. This is a bright line rule that can be followed and applied, and I think it's good law. And of course, as you've seen, the federal courts have adopted it wholeheartedly.
Address the part of the case that deals with the lie detector test, and in particular, my reading of things that are presented in the briefs as falling heavily upon what's in the mind of the police chief in deciding what is an extraordinary circumstance, and in making the judgment call of do we ask for a lie detector test or not.
Yes, Your Honor, there's no doubt that the decision as to whether to impose a lie detector falls squarely within discretion of the chief of police. In fact, the statute says it, as does Arlington's manual. It states that the police chief or his designee, if he considers the circumstances to be extraordinary, so it's his consideration, what he believes, and so it's within his discretion. Here, Mr. Kovacs, there was testimony that the circumstances were extraordinary, and I think the record reveals that. The police chief had grave concerns about the safety of some of the other employees. One of them had been threatened personally, an active detective, and he felt like he needed to pursue this tool that is available to police chiefs to make sure that his officers had the integrity required of police officers and that the safety of the public was at hand. And that's when he requested the polygraph.
Well, doesn't that, in effect, though, go against the arbitration award? Because he's wanting to go back into whether the conduct that the employee committed was wrongful or not.
I don't think it's an end run around
the
arbitration, Justice Gardner. To me, the polygraph is a separate tool that is available to the chief of police under extraordinary circumstances, which I believe the record reveals existed here. There's no indication in the statute or any case law that I've seen that limits the ability of a police chief to use that tool if there's also an arbitration or there's litigation or there's something else. There's just no statutory support that mechanism would not be available to him even under these circumstances.
So if he uses the tool and he has a lie detector test, and what is the choice that's to be made by the police chief on reinstatement in a fact situation like we have in this case?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, the police chief himself is not giving the lie detector test, of course. The city contracts with people, and every single police officer who joins the force is required to take a polygraph. And there's a standard booklet that's completed that contains all sorts of information, and that is what the polygrapher relies on and uses to give the test. But to answer your question directly, if Mr. Kovacs did not pass the polygraph examination, then I'd have to assume that he would not be reinstated to the police force.
And that would be contrary to what had happened in the arbitration proceeding.
It would certainly it would be contrary to the result, but it would be for a different reason.
And where in the Arlington arbitration and employee agreement language does it provide that a polygraph test will, or a the result of a polygraph test can override the determination made by an arbitration award?
I'm not aware of a provision that specifically says that, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the arbitration provision does say it's binding on the city as well as the employee, right?
That's correct, Your Honor, and it certainly would be binding with respect to the rules violations that he was alleged to have engaged in that led to his termination. To me, even though the result may be the same, the refusal to reinstate is for a different reason. It's not because the chief of police would be ignoring the arbitration award. It's because the employee failed a polygraph, which the chief of police deemed critical to ensure public safety.
About the same conduct, though.
It certainly would. There would be overlap among the conduct. Certainly, Your Honor.
Mr. Barnett, in your prayer, what you say is that you're asking for this court to reverse the trial court's confirmation of the award and render judgment in Arlington's favor, setting the award aside in its entirety. If that were to happen, what happens next? Do you have to go back through another arbitration?
Well, Your Honor, what we believe the case law dictates is that the award be set aside, and that's the end of the proceeding among the parties. That's what the cases, that's what occurs in the cases we cite. They set the award aside and that's the end of it. Of course, the Civil Practice and Remedies Code does contain a provision that allows for, at the court's option, a new hearing. And so that's the court's discretion. We advocate that the award be set aside and that the proceedings end.
And at that point, then, Officer Kovacs would not be reinstated, would not have a job as a policeman, and would just have been terminated, and that's it.
Yes, he would not work for the Arlington Police Department, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
A new hearing where? Before the trial court?
No, it'd be a new hearing before newly chosen arbitrators, Your Honor.
I just had one question about the ability of the trial court, or authority of the trial court, to set aside the arbitration award in part, but not having that authority, but only being able to vacate. I don't see anything in the language of the provision regarding judicial review of the arbitration award that says that. That says that the trial court can't do that.
Your Honor, the judicial review provision, which is titled "Suit to Set Aside Arbitrator's Decision," is found in Section 111.53 of the manual. And what it states is that a district court may set aside an arbitrator's decision only on the ground that the arbitrator was without jurisdiction or exceeded his or her authority, or that the decision is manifestly a violation of law. It does not contemplate modification. It only speaks of setting it aside. And our position is that that is what was required.
Okay.
Only as to, I mean, I know you want it set aside entirely. I get that. But this comes up because the only thing he modified was saying that he didn't get back pay for the time he was in jail, correct?
He did, Your Honor.
He did, but the trial court said he wasn't entitled to that. So
yes.
That's how he modified it.
That's correct. And that was a correct decision, but we believe that at that point it needed to go back to a new arbitration.
On that issue only, if we don't set aside everything?
On the entirety of it. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You have a rebuttal?
May it please the court, Christopher David Livingston for Officer Kovacs. The city's position is the antithesis of our justice system. A grand jury has found no probable cause to indict Kovacs on the charges. A judge has found that there isn't sufficient evidence to enter a protective order on the charges. An arbitrator has found that the evidence is insufficient to establish by a preponderance of the evidence that Kovacs engaged in the activities. One accuser has recanted her testimony, and that same accuser also told two police departments that she made up her story. And the other accuser signed an affidavit of non-prosecution at the urging of an Arlington police officer. Yet the city considers Kovacs guilty until proven innocent by a test that is not even allowed in evidence in the court of law. And here we are with the city challenging the award that the city's proposed arbitrator granted, with the city's new argument that it knows it asked for modification, but it really didn't want it, and it was clear error to have given the city what it asked for. Fundamentally, as I address some of the points, I just want to point out again that the city has invited the error. It has invited the error, and it should be stopped from arguing basically what Mr. Kovacs argued 2 years ago. 2 years ago, Mr. Kovacs said that the only thing the district court could do was set aside the arbitration. There was no ability to modify. Yet the city came back and they argued that no, it could be modified. They put that in their pleadings, they put that in their first amended pleading, and they put that in their trial brief. And as Mr. Arnett pointed out in the city's appellate argument, our appellate brief, the reply brief, that is in fact what they argued. It's the invited error doctrine. It cannot, the city cannot come up here complaining that the judge gave them what they wanted. With regard to the polygraph, it's interesting that the city's position is that they could order the polygraph based on both state law and on the city's policies. But both of those policies require that the department head provide the peace officer with a written explanation of the nature of the extraordinary circumstances when the order comes in place. The city's policy exactly tracks what is in the state statute, Texas Government Code 614.063E. And both of those statutes, or both the statute and the policy, are addressing the fact that it has to be during an internal investigation. And that's what the city testified to. Chief Johnson got on the stand and basically told us what was he gonna do the polygraph on. And it's not a rehire packet. Sure, they gave that to him, but he said, and the city has admitted, that what they plan on polygraphing Mr. Kovacs on is the same thing that the arbitrator heard, whether or not he committed the charges, whether or not he was lying when he said he didn't, because he said he didn't do it. Now we want to know whether or not he's lying. That is substituting the decision of the arbitrator for the decision of a polygraph examiner. And that's simply just not allowed, especially, again, when the city has failed to go through the statutory prerequisites to filing that order. The city tries to attempt to say, well, but we gave him a charge earlier on, so he knows that that's what we're polygraphing him on. Mr. Kovacs didn't know that when he received the polygraph order. We didn't find that out until the trial, until Chief Johnson basically admitted on the stand that that's what he was going to test him on. He wasn't going to test him on the new hire packet. He was going to test him on whether or not he had committed the alleged crimes. The alleged crimes, again, that several courts and an arbitrator have all looked at and concluded Mr. Kovacs did not commit. And with regard to the due process argument, let me point this out two ways. The city is arguing that Mr. Kovacs, or that the court was in error based on the fact that the arbitrator considered post-termination evidence. But the evidence wasn't evidence of some sort of rehabilitation efforts like it is in their court, in the cases that they cite. The evidence was whether or not he had committed the infraction. And Mr. Kovacs is not asking that the investigation last till eternity and that he is forever on administrative leave. He's just asking that it take more than 2 days.
What is the outside limit, Mr. Livingston, that you would have the courts apply as to when the evidence should be closed?
I think that would be up to the individual circumstance. I don't know that there should be a bright line rule to that effect. But let's also.
How is anybody supposed to know? Because you can take this to an extreme and say, okay, if this was Michael Morton and 25 years later it was actually proved he was innocent, he could then get back pay and be reinstated. How is one to know?
I don't think you could do that because ultimately he would have to go through an arbitration proceeding where he would have to claim his innocence and then the arbitrator would decide. And that would be a final and binding decision.
25 years later.
Well, the city doesn't have to wait 25 years. I'm not asking that the city wait 25 years. I'm saying it has to be a reasonable time. And doing it like that is not a reasonable time because...
He was in jail for 42 days, so it wasn't 2 days, was it?
Yes, it was 2 days because he was arrested on the 19th and dismissed on the 21st of January 2011. And we have to remember, with regard to all of the cases that the city is citing to, that we're not talking about a public employee. We're talking about private employees. And as the 14th Court of Appeals in Houston has recognized in the Turner versus Perry case, the police officers have a property interest in their jobs. So what we're doing here, what the city is doing, is forsaking due process by basically saying, well, we did it quickly enough that we don't have to give you due process. When, in fact, Mr. Kovacs has proven time and again, essentially, that he didn't commit the crimes. Also, the city points to United Paper Workers versus MISCO. Mr. Arnett just pointed you there. And here's what he said. Labor arbitrators have stated that the correctness of a discharge, quote, must stand or fall upon the reason given at the time of the discharge, end quote. Let me read the rest of that footnote. And arbitrators often, but not always, confine their considerations to the facts known to the employer at the time of the discharge. It's not a hard and fast rule. Sometimes they cut it off, and sometimes they don't. And as the court said in MISCO, procedural questions which grow out of the dispute and bear on its final disposition are to be left to the arbitrator. This is a procedural question. Maybe it was error. I would agree with Mr. Arnett. Judge Evans seemed to think it was error, but it wasn't a substantial error, and it was a discretion that was left to the arbitrator. So it's not an error that causes a reversal in this case.
Mr. Livingston, I don't see. Did you say Turner versus Perry?
Yeah, Turner versus Perry.
Not in your list of cases. If you got a cite for it, I'll go read it. You can furnish it later.
All right, I'll furnish it later. Here it is, 278 Southwest 3rd, 806.
You said that Mr. Kovacs has proven time and time again that he did not commit the offenses charged. An affidavit of non-prosecution isn't the same as somebody saying it didn't happen. It's just saying I don't want to go forward on this. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that.
And as far as the alleged threats that were made to police officers, they didn't sign an affidavit of non-prosecution, did they?
Well, they testified, though, in the arbitration. At least one of the officers testified that he never heard a threat that he was alleged to have made in front of his presence.
So one of two said it didn't happen?
Yes.
But the other did not?
That's correct. The other officer, I don't believe, was even called to, called to testify, but I'm not 100% positive on that. And again, that was looked at by a grand jury, and they did not find probable cause to bring any charges against Mr. Kovacs. That was one of the four things in front of the grand jury. I guess I'll give back the remainder of my time unless y'all have any more questions.
Wilk?
I don't hear any. Okay. So thank you, counsel. Now we have an opportunity for rebuttal. Mr. Barlow.
Police court. Mr. Livingston states vehemently in his response brief and in the beginning of his argument that we are changing course, that we asked for modification in the trial court, and now we're asking that the award be set aside. That's incorrect. We briefed this extensively. The city has, from the beginning of this case, starting with its original petition, has sought to set this award aside and in the alternative have it modified. That was pled purely in the alternative, and the city pled for that it be vacated in its petition, in its summary judgment, in its reply in support of its summary judgment, in its trial brief, in its supplemental trial brief, and I have quotes from myself at the trial where I was urging the court that the award be set aside. So we have been consistent from day one with respect to our position in this case. Regarding the polygraph, I want to put words in Chief Johnson's mouth, so I'm just going to read from what he said at the trial itself when he was questioned about why he wanted the polygraph.
Where are you reading? What are you reading from?
This is page 6 from our reply brief, Your Honor.
Thought I'd seen it somewhere and couldn't find it.
It's in there, and it's also to reporters' record 49 and 54. And during the trial, Chief Johnson stated, Mr. Kovac's case was an extraordinary case. It placed the department's reputation at great peril, both internally and externally. I had employees that were fearful of Mr. Kovac's. I had a community that obviously would have questions as to the allegation that were brought forward against him, brought towards him, rather. And I had some real questions myself with the information that had come out of the arbitration proceedings as to the extent of activities that he may or may not have been engaged in. The department had already suffered significant blows to its reputation in the community based on this case, and I wanted to do my due diligence to make sure that everything was being done in an effort to both honor the reinstatement process that I was obliged by the arbitrator to do, but also to make sure that there were no other issues that were left unanswered. That is the reason he wanted the polygraph. He did not say, I wanted to retry the arbitration. He had true safety concerns, as is his job to be concerned about. With respect to the post-termination evidence, Mr. Livingston said that this is not a case like Gulf Coast where it was evidence of rehabilitation or something of that nature. It's much worse. This is evidence of nothing. The post-termination evidence that was considered in this case is evidence of nothing pertinent to whether Mr. Kovac's violated the personnel rules as charged. It's only evidence that a sexual assault victim or alleged victim did not want to proceed with offering testimony. That happens every day, and that's why single witness assault cases are some of the hardest as a prosecutor to bring. And that's what happened, and that's why that evidence is not probative. It does not bear on whether he actually violated personnel rules as charged. With respect to Mr. Livingston's arguments about due process, I just note that there's no due process claim before the court. Mr. Kovac's dropped those before trial. And finally, with respect to the evidence regarding threats to the police officers, the reason the police officers testified, or the single police officer testified, that he did not hear any threats is because the threats were told to someone else who then reported them to the police. So I don't even believe that the police officer was alleging that the threats did not occur. Unless you have...
Mr. Arnett.
Yes, Your Honor.
Did MH, that's the fiancé, right? Did she testify before the grand jury?
Don't know, Your Honor. And neither did Mr. Kovac's counsel during the arbitration. I did not handle the arbitration. The question was posed, did she testify? And the Mr. Kovac's lawyer, and I can give you a record site, I believe, here in a moment, testified. This is at 6, reporters record 50, and PX 30. He said, I don't know whether she testified or not. The grand jury proceeding was secret. We don't know what occurred.
6, reporters record 30?
6, reporters record 50, and it's also plaintiff's exhibit 30.
Plaintiff's Exhibit 30 is what?
That's the underlying record from the arbitration.
Oh, from the arbitration. So
yes,
we do have that.
At the beginning of that record is the transcript, okay. And that's where that's found.
Okay.
Well,
thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Ms. Barlow, I didn't recognize you before. Glad to have you here. Glad to have all of you, and we appreciate your arguments and your briefing on the couple of unique questions. First time questions. Thank you very much. Your case is submitted.